Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Stahmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
This is Colin Mitchell. I have recorded podcasts with Jörg in the past, and I'm sitting here in the East London Airport with some time on our hands and a very productive way to spend it. I'm intending to turn things around a little, whereas for the last 20 or 30 episodes of the LED cast, Jörg has been asking the questions and putting us all on under pressure. We're going to turn it around a bit, and I'm going to ask Jörg from his experience where he believes many of the issues around LED go wrong. Hi, Jörg. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Colin. It's nice to be in this other position for a change.
Jörg, one of the things you've always spoken to me about is this complete mismatch between when you've worked with customers all over the world, where you've seen the expectation of what people are asked to do and then the ultimate product that is delivered. What, in your opinion, are the real issues around expectations in the setting up and the execution of a project?
Well, a couple of years ago, a friend of mine pointed out that there is a term and a concept called management of expectations, which actually I wasn't quite aware of. And he explained it to me, and it immediately made a hell of a lot of sense. So management of expectations is, well, first of all, a reflection that you have to do yourself, where you ask yourself, what are the kind of expectations that I'm creating? And then, what are the kind of expectations I want to create? And how do I do that most effectively?
In this whole area of expectations, where in fact does the positioning and the setup and the opportunity for the management of expectations start to actually go wrong?
Well, as usually, it starts to get wrong as early as possible, sometimes at the very first contact. I think what not every practitioner realizes is that not only what we say is creating expectations, but also how we say it, and where we say it, and through the kind of clothes that we wear while we are talking to other people, and through the car we drive up with. So there's a whole variety of factors that create expectations. Just to give one example, some of our customers would typically say, well, we don't really have any money. What we can do is offer support in terms of training courses, in terms of facilitation, so we can do some capacity building, but we don't really have any money for you to implement projects. And then they have these seminars in the best hotel in town, and they really fancy car, and they wear shoes that are visibly very expensive brands. And they say, well, we don't really have any money. And the local stakeholders or the counterparts or whoever they're interacting with say, yeah, right.
So you find yourself at this hotel and everything's going well. How, in fact, does this start to go wrong in the minds of the customer, of the person who's going to do it? How does it start to manifest? And really, what is his chain of thought leading to where he finally decides how he's going to behave and treat you as a potential potential service provider?
Or as a potential partner in some development activity, some development project. Well, I think it has to some extent to do with the fact that sometimes we are just not very good at explaining what we want to do and what we can do. That is something that I have often observed in the context of interactions where people don't really understand, that don't really fundamentally understand why development people like us are around anyway and why development organizations are around anyway. We've often found that business people don't really understand the logic of us doing good. So they think we have some hidden agenda, or are looking for cheap land to buy, or we are secret emissaries of the tax authority or something like that. So that is one level where this communication can very easily go wrong. We explain something which we think makes perfect sense, but the people we talk to just can't make any sense out of this. They just don't see what kind of logic we are following, why we would want to do something like that, which they find is actually something very silly that you only do if you're maybe in the church, but definitely not when you are a professional. The other thing that I think we often don't appreciate properly is the mismatch between what we say and how and where we say it. So we come in and say, well, we don't really have any money to fund implementation activities. So what we can offer you is facilitation, we can run some training and such kind capacity building activities. But we can't really help you with the implementation, that we don't have any project money. And then you drive up with a really expensive car and are wearing really expensive clothes. That is something where obviously the people on the other side, the people you're talking to see that there is a mismatch. So there's a tension between, or a contradiction between, what you say and the way you appear and act. And they notice that, and then they try to make sense of that, and they say, yeah, so he's just modest, so he won't tell us now that there's lots of money. But of course there's lots of money, and also we've heard about these other guys, this other development project that went on somewhere else, and they had boatloads of money, so he just doesn't want to tell us right now, but there's definitely a lot of money, so we mustn't believe what he's telling right now.
Sounds very plausible. Then as the discussion rolls on, we're making assumptions that you have a customer who has a desperate need, who needs money, who needs expertise. They have some money, but not enough. You have this donor agency who manifests this huge amounts of money. They've got smart cars, fancy clothes, great hotels. You've then also got consultants that come in, probably showing the same signs of affluence. How does the divergence of expectations of the customer and the ability to fulfill those expectations on behalf of the agency or the consultant, how does this difference start to manifest?
Well, looking at the way consultants often behave, they are typically under a hell of a pressure from their customer, the development agency, to deliver a fact-finding report or a planning report, or conducting an LED diagnosis or something like that. So they are under pressure to do that, and they can only do that based on the conversations that they have. So they need to engage with local people. They need to talk to local people, maybe individually, maybe in workshops. And then the local people will invariably ask, so why would I spend my time with you? I'm a very busy business person. I'm a very busy municipal manager. I have a really tight agenda, and now you want an hour of my time, so why would I give that to you? And that is then where maybe the most critical moment happens, where things very often go horribly wrong, because the soft option for the consultant is then to say, well, you see, I'm here on behalf of this and that development agency, and we have a big project coming up, and there's millions and millions that we're going to roll out in your area, and I'm currently doing the fact-finding to see where possible priorities would lie. So the consultant starts to make promises, is obviously creating expectations in a very explicit way as well as in the implicit way. And that is then where maybe the key expectations are created, and where the seeds are planted for much disappointment and much frustration further down the line.
From your experience, is there any way in which you can recover the situation? You've had a consultant go in, they've made promises, often to secure the work, often to try and create a convincing argument that they've done a great job, but in fact they've probably largely bought the result based on the wrong expectations. In your opinion, is there any way after that where you can recover the situation, or is it just pretty much a downhill from there?
Well, I think the first thing that one has to realize, for instance, if I'm now a project manager, I'm coming in, so some consultant has been there, done the planning, now the project is starting, I'm hitting the ground locally, and I'm facing expectations. I think it's crucial for me as a project manager to understand what those expectations are. I'm not actually sure that all of the project managers who come in start with their project do this in an explicit way. Everybody does it in an implicit way. And typically in your work process, you stumble across this expectation where you ask, oh, where is that coming from? And that other expectations where you think, phew, where do people catch up these things, and why are they so outrageous, and why do they think that I'm bringing a whole box of money? So that is the implicit way, and it's a very frustrating way, and that is typically a process where you as a project manager start to build resentment with local stakeholders, with local partners even. So I think it's much better to as early as possible then kind of assess what the expectations are that your local partners, local stakeholders have, and then try to analyze that and see, okay, so is this kind of adequate? Is it close to what we can deliver? Or is there a huge gap between what the expectations are and what I can actually deliver? And the bigger the gap is, the more challenging, obviously, it is to try to fix that then.
Under all these circumstances, what then really would the end product look like? The delivery of the report or the ultimate achievement of the assignment, what would the real end product look like?
Well, if you look at it from the perspective of the consultant who is involved in, say, a project preparation or, say, an LED diagnosis like a PACA exercise in an LED process, I think part of his brief, part of his term, his or her terms, would have to be share with us what kind of expectations you have created, share with us what kind of expectations you have found beforehand, and give us some input in terms of what you think the expectations are that we are confronting locally. And as a consultant, if you're working professionally, obviously good management of expectations would be part of your professional ethos and your professional skills. And neither in a project preparation phase nor, say, in an LED analysis, in a strategic planning exercise and as part of your LED or one of those things, you would create exaggerated expectations. And one of the ways to achieve that, obviously, is to engage local stakeholders as much as possible. To try to pull in some local colleagues, some local people early on and try to build a relationship with them so that they then also can help you with, well, making contacts, engaging with other stakeholders, explaining to other people what you are about to do and what kind of resources you will and you won't bring.
What is likely to happen as you go through this project and come to a final conclusion if you don't get this whole issue of management of expectations right from the start? What is likely to happen and how is it likely to snowball?
The good thing about bad management of expectations is that it tends to get punished viciously. The bad thing about it is that you get punished even though it's not your fault. So if you come in as a project manager, you are punished for something that somebody, some other person did earlier. Some other person who maximized their personal utility but didn't think of what was going to happen subsequently. When you are doing, say, a PACA exercise and you notice that the management of expectations has gone horribly wrong, it's really bad luck because then you are faced with a situation that you have to explain to local people that actually they are expected to solve most of their problems and that not you are going to do that. So that's a challenge that we have quite often confronted. And I think, yeah, maybe it's something that you, so you would also like to share your thoughts about some of your experiences. So like when you do a PACA exercise, when you do a quick appraisal of a local economy and you notice that there are mismanaged expectations, wrong expectations around, what do you typically do in that kind of case?
Unfortunately, in the circumstances where you get overinflated expectations, wrong expectations and promises that have been made, unfortunately, it's more prevalent than we probably even believe or like to see. The truth is you then have to take people through a process and say, you know, that may be what you expect, that may be what you would like to see, but is it realistic? And that becomes probably one of the major time consumers in any of the workshops that are conducted in order to try and get a successful outcome. The other real issue here is that far too many consultants seem to want to keep the customer happy rather than tell him the truth. And that in itself becomes a self-defeating issue where one overinflated expectation builds on another to the end of the day when the body of knowledge just becomes completely worthless in many cases. Jörg, thanks for your time. If you were just to give us one one phrase to round off this interview, what do you think it would be?
I don't really have a nice, catchy, sexy phrase. I think the key point is to emphasize that there is something called management of expectations and that you really want to do that at all times in a very explicit way. And I have often experienced that people just are not aware of this factor. They are not aware of the fact that it is actually essential to manage expectations. And highlighting that over and over again is something that I find very, very important.
Jörg, thanks very much for your time, and enjoy your next few days in Johannesburg, and we hope to see you again soon.
Right, thank you very much.